Once again this morning on the program, we welcome back a friend of ours. Brian Johnson is his name. He's professor of journalism at U of I. He teaches photojournalism. He's former newspaper photographer. And occasionally is on the program. We talk about cameras and photography. So it's an opportunity for people to ask questions. Can be about technique, things that you can do to make for better pictures. Or it can be about equipment, about lenses, cameras, film. Increasingly, I think over the years, we've started to talk more and more about digital photography and how people can use their computers to manipulate and produce the images. So any and all of that is certainly welcome. I know Brian will do his best to answer your question. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Hi.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Yeah, glad to be here.
Good. One of the big, obviously, the big change probably over the time that we've been doing the show, obviously we've talked about this over and over again, is the move to digital photography.
Right.
And, you know, the fact that, and what's interesting about that, I guess we talked a lot about the fact that now with relatively inexpensive equipment, you can take digital photographs and then by using a computer and a program, you can do various things and process the
right
image,
anything you want,
right? Just about
really
anything you want. And it doesn't, there, you know, some of those programs are really expensive and maybe you have to be know a lot about,
right.
But a lot of them are just not
right.
that not
right.
that complicated
right.
And,
right.
and almost anybody could use them.
And the issue is time. How much time do you have to do it? Because sure, it's all inexpensive now, but it's not like shooting a roll of film and dropping it off at your local friendly photo finisher. Right. It's getting to that point, right? You can take in a flashcard or a CD with your images.
Yeah, have them make them up. Yeah.
And that's, you know, all the way through for the last several years, that's what I was always saying, right? That was the missing part of the puzzle. And now that puzzle piece is starting to appear, so it's getting a little bit easier. Even some of the printers, they have little memory card slots right on the printer. And some of them even have a little screen right on the printer, so you can plug in your card and see the images and print it out directly from there.
Yeah. One of the things I wondered about is, though, the act of taking the picture.
Right.
Everything that happens.
Still the same.
Is that, so it hasn't, I mean, everything that happens, you know, up to the point where you push the button, has digital photography changed the way people take pictures in like
that? It has, yeah. There's something that photojournalists call chimping. Where after you take your picture, you look down at the screen and go, ooh, 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 look at this picture I just shot. So chimping has come into our lexicon in photography.
I like that a lot.
And I would say that's the most significant change, and it is a significant change. On the downside of it, it takes you away from the moment. You know, you're so busy looking at the picture you just shot that you're not paying attention to what's happening next. On the positive side, though, there's a great deal of confidence you can get from looking at that image and knowing that you've captured that one, so now everything after that is just kind of the bonus shot.
Yeah.
Or if something went wrong, you can check the focus, you can check the exposure, you can do all that stuff.
So right away you can know, did I get what
Absolutely.
I want?
Absolutely, and boy, what a relief that is.
I wonder whether the fact that now you can do that, and then if the picture's no good, you can just delete that, whether... That's dangerous, too.
Is that where you're going
with
that?
Well, I'm just thinking that you don't maybe have to think about as much about, okay, I have so many exposures and I've taken so many and I only have so many pictures more. Now you can
True.
Take as many pictures
True.
As you want, really.
And honestly, what the danger is, you have such a small screen to analyze that image that maybe there's a detail, you know, maybe it's a picture of a flower and there's a little bee floating in there. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bird is sticking its head up, you know, and you delete it because you didn't think it was anything. Or if it was an extra one. So I try not to do that unless I'm really desperate. What I'll do if I'm running low on available exposures on my memory card, if there's some that are obviously, you know, it was pointed at the sky and it accidentally took a picture. If it was totally black, yeah, I'm going to probably take those out. But sometimes what I'll do is I'll make an analysis and I'll say, how important are these photos and what am I likely to do with them? If I'm just going to do little snapshots of them, sort of little memory aids, then what I can do is lower the resolution of the image that I'm going to capture so that instead of, you know, one picture taking up 1 megabyte, maybe one picture takes up 500K in JPEG compressed mode.
So with that, for people who have no idea what you're talking about, that just means you can take more pictures.
You can take more pictures, right, instead of it, you know, being a file that's as big as a breadbasket, it's as big as a slice of bread.
Yeah, okay.
Metaphorically speaking.
Okay. So the quality of the image may not be quite so good.
Right, and you might not be able to enlarge it.
Right,
exactly. If I'm just shooting a bunch of pictures just to remember, you know, a trip to a museum somewhere where I'm not going to do anything. Now, I still hesitate to do that. I still don't feel great about that. But if it's the choice between not taking any pictures. And sometimes what I do, too, is I start slowing down. I start, you know, do I really need this picture?
Okay. Well, we got a couple people here holding on, and we will not make them wait any longer. We'll go first to Urbana, line number one.
Is this me?
Yes.
Okay. I have a problem with my digital camera. It seems like every image, or at least every image that's a landscape shot with some sky in it, has a smudge right at a certain spot. I've tried cleaning the lens. That was my first thought. And I don't know what it is. It's sometimes it's more intense than other times. And I'm guessing that it's something wrong with the, I think it's called the CCD, the part that actually picks up the image, the thing that's analogous to the film and the
film
camera.
Right.
And I just wonder if you can give me any thought as to what it is. And the reason I guess part of my question has to do with the policies of the manufacturer. This is a Sony camera, and I think it's one of the most wonderful cameras I've ever owned in terms of its operation. I like the way the controls are laid out. I like the fact that it's so small. But Sony's service has got to be just about the worst in the industry.
You know, tell me about the smudge itself and what it looks like.
Well, it's black and or just darker than the rest of it, and at times it looks very, very dark, and other times it's much more subtle. I've been able to take it out if it's in the sky just by using the Adobe Photoshop clone tool.
Right. When you enlarge the image in that spot, what does it look like?
Just sort of a black spot or dark
okay.
spot. But
okay.
it's always the same. It's on every image. It's in the same spot, and it's about the same shape.
Yeah. You know, I think that it could be a problem with the imaging sensor chip.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I guess if a few of those little pixel sensors were not producing the same amount of voltage
right.
as the rest of them because of some corrosion or something that took place
right.
in there,
something wrong with the
chip. That could, it seems to me, could cause that.
You know, I mean, I suppose there's one other possibility that on the back surface of the lens, not the front surface that you're able to get to, but the back surface of the lens, there could be...
Well, that's thought, too.
There could be a little speck of dust or something in that spot.
Yeah. It doesn't have very sharp edges, though, and it's
right.
kind of like...
Well, and that's... But that would be exactly correct, that if it's on the back of the lens, it wouldn't have sharp edges. It would just
okay.
be a little bit blurred.
I see. Okay.
So that would be another possibility, and there's
well,
no easy way to...
Well, which would also be a lot of expense.
Right. Exactly. You know, it's almost anymore where... You can't get anything serviced without it costing $100, $125.
Right, that's right, yeah.
yeah.
Which is about a third, at least a
right.
third of the cost
exactly.
of the camera.
Exactly, so. Okay.
All right, well, but nothing springs to mind.
No, and I mean, other than exactly the two things that we said, could be
okay.
something on
okay,
the back
of the
lens.
Okay, but you haven't had experience with this showing up in other cameras.
Well, you know, there is a situation where some of the imaging points, some of the pixels on the sensor could be bad.
I see.
And the manufacturers will accept a certain percentage of those to be bad. So if it's, you know, like a 5 million pixel, 5 megapixel camera, you know, and, you know, 10 of those pixels are bad, then they're probably going to let it go. Sometimes they use algorithms to sort of average out where the fault is and things like that. So so it is heard of, and it is hard to know exactly what it is without seeing it, but I think you're right on the money that it could be on the sensor, or it could be, as I was saying, on the back of the lens.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to Indiana, line number four. Hello.
Hello. I'm going to speak in very general terms. I see the use of the Adobe and those other utensils basically moving the craft aspect of taking photos somewhere else, not like it was when I was younger in the 50s, and I used to follow around the guy did the photojournalism for my hometown newspaper, and he used to explain a lot of things to me, and he was always very proud of getting the correct picture
right.
at the right time, and there were very few other people do it, you know, and then you go to his house and you have all these things, you know, from you know, photo outfits, you know, what good pictures he took and stuff.
Right.
And secondarily, that is, I was wondering where we are in the war with the digital versus the SLRs. I have two of each kind of cameras, in a sense, and I'm slowly getting out of the hobby, mainly because I'm not really interested in going into a photograph I've did, you know, quote unquote, badly, and start playing around with it. Though
sure.
Most of the people I know will spend hours sometimes to work on something that's one of some of the most mundane photos I've ever seen in my life.
Right.
But anyway, I just sort of, you know, in the larger picture, you know, where are we headed?
Well, I think you're right that so often people think, you know, I don't really care so much of, you know, what happens when I shoot it because I can always fix it later. I was conducting a photo workshop about a month ago, and I was talking to the assembled group about setting the white balance. Setting the white balance is where you basically adjust the camera's colors for the scene that you're shooting. And I said, you know, yeah, sure, you know, you could try to fix this later, but your image is going to be so much better if you're conscious of setting the color, setting the white balance while you're shooting. And you're exactly right. So people think, oh, I can just fix it later. So they're maybe not as careful as they should be when they're shooting. Because you're right. You can literally spend hours, literally hours, fixing something when a little bit of care when you shot it would have eliminated
the whole thing. I did that one time, just to more or less buckle under the kids. You know, I mean, it's such a big thing for the youngsters who not really have had to do an f-stop or anything else, as far as that goes. You know, I started out that way, then moved into the automatics, then to the digitals, and I'm hoping that my attitude is not just because I'm losing interest after all these years, but it seems to be a, you know, sort of a shift, like almost
sure.
like a paradigm shift
sure.
here.
Sure.
And I sort of wonder who are going to be the photographers, if we're going to have photographers show up, you know, on museum walls and stuff, just what in the world are they going to be doing?
Right. Well, and I think there is a paradigm shift in that as we've moved through technology in photography, it's always caused a lot of angst by the people who were comfortable with the prior technology. So as they moved from, you know, view cameras, you know, 4x5, 8x10 inch negatives to small format cameras, like, you know, maybe only 4x5 instead of 8x10, or maybe they were 2¼ square, there was concern, oh, the craft is going out. But I think in reality, you still do find people. It's like I was saying with David at the start of the show, that still ultimately it's the photographer and what they do with the equipment, not the equipment itself. So even though we're moving in that way, you're still going to have people who are going to care about certain types of images, and they're going to work hard to get that no matter what the technology is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.
Yeah. But I think it's a really good point, David, that, you know, sometimes people rely too much on the technology and they stop thinking, gee, it's got autofocus. Well, does that mean your image is in focus? You know, you still need to be paying attention to that. It has auto exposure. Okay, but, you know, do you want to think about that? Did you stop the action? Look, it's all blurred here and it was, you know, a soccer game. Or maybe you're doing a landscape shot, and it's like, yeah, but, you know, the whole foreground's out of focus. So for a landscape, normally you'd like to see all of that in focus. So that is a danger anytime you're moving to a technology where it makes it easier, is that some people think, oh, then I don't have to think anymore. And that's not the case, you know, and I think it's a mistake that people make.
Questions are welcome. Brian Johnson's our guest. He's professor of journalism in the College of Communications at U of I, a former newspaper photographer, and has been here on the program many times to talk about cameras and photography. If you have questions, as I said at the beginning, either about technique, how things that you can do to get a better picture, or about the equipment, cameras, lenses, film, now increasingly digital, any and all that, you can give us a call. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We think there still will be people, say, you know, people who do formal portraits or people who do landscape photography at an artistic level or whatever, that are still going to be shooting film?
Sure, sure. I think so. I mean, I think for the average consumer, film is going away. I think definitely for the photojournalist film is going away. But, you know, we still have people who paint, right? Mm-hmm. We have photography. Why do they need to paint, right? We can get a representation of something without painting. We still have sculptors. Why do we need, you know, we can just do a 3D model on a computer. Why do we need to have a sculptor, you know? But we do, because those forms are still beautiful in their own way. They still are satisfying to create works of art in those medium, in that mediums, you know, whatever it might be. So,
and then maybe, well, let me ask some basic questions about for those people who were thinking about buying a digital camera,
right?
Again, and this
buy the most expensive one.
Well,
I'm kidding.
Might be an impulse, or you know, you never know. Maybe buy the one that's got seems to have the most features.
Right.
Or,
you know what I liked about what the last caller said, the caller right before that had the problem with the little blur on the image sensor. The thing that he said that I think is really the crucial point. I love this camera because I understand how all the controls are laid out. So ultimately, yes, some of the concerns of how many pixels, how much image detail can it record? That's normally, 5 megapixel camera, okay? Or 10 megapixel, whatever. That's rated in megapixels. But ultimately, if you don't feel comfortable with that camera, you're not going to use it. So really going to a store, holding that camera, seeing how it works, seeing if the controls make sense to you, that's what's important. It doesn't really matter how much it costs, as long as it has the features that you want, as long as it feels good in your hand and you feel confident that you're going to be able to use that camera.
Yeah. There was a time, seemingly not all that long ago, that 5 megapixels was a lot.
Oh, yeah.
That was huge. And now,
absolutely, because the professional cameras, like 2 megapixels. Yeah. Wow. $5,000, 2 megapixels.
Yeah, so now you get a 5 megapixel camera and it's not that expensive. Yeah. How many megapixels do you need?
Are we going into bigger is better here? I think that it really depends on your use, but here's the thing, is that you can get a larger imaging sensor, and by larger I mean more pixels in it. You might not need, an 8 megapixel camera, but what if you want to crop out most of it? Let's say you couldn't get close enough to little Johnny playing soccer. Well, with an 8 megapixel camera, you could crop into that center part of the picture and still have pretty good detail. So, day to day, you might not need that much resolution in your imaging sensor, but it does allow you to crop into the image and, gives you also the chance on the case where you get that, fantastic shot where you can have it enlarged and have enough detail in that image to enlarge it.
Okay. We've got some other callers here. Let's talk with somebody in Moultrie County, line one. Hello. Is there a caller there, line one?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Question. What's too much megapixels for a small, just an amateur camera? What you can afford?
Sure. I think for the average kind of snap shooter or casual photographer, I think 4 megapixel camera is really pretty decent. If you're mostly just doing snapshots, and let's say you're then going to go to like an inkjet printer, or if you're going to take them to your local discount store to be printed out, I think 4 megapixels is plenty.
Okay, the next question I have has nothing to do with that. Does the journalism department have an archive of old pictures that have been taken by students?
It's a funny thing. There are some photos that I have archived from students in the 50s and 60s and maybe a little bit in the 70s. There are also some contest pictures and things, but there are a few photos that students have taken from that time.
Good. The reason I ask, I took one of those pictures, and I wondered who's still in the archive. How can I check?
Why don't you send me an email, and I can look and see what I have there. My email address is B as in boy, K as in Keith, and J as in Johnson. So it's bkj@uiuc.edu.
E-K-J.
Yeah, BKJ, like Brian Keith Johnson.
BKJ.
Yeah, BKJ,
okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and then just describe the photo for me so I know what I'm looking for.
Okay. Thank you.
All sure.
Right, thanks for the call. Champagne is next. Line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
This is Adriana. I have a question. I'm using right now an Nikon Copic 885.
Right.
The only problem I have is it's never fast enough. If I have something to choose right now, because it's in that moment,
right.
I have to wait.
Right.
I wonder if it's something also digital. I am big Photoshop user, but I wonder if it's something faster, because the old style camera I can choose right away.
Right,
but
right.
It's really expensive using still.
Right, and that is a downside for some of the, well, most digital cameras take a little bit of time to get ready to shoot a picture.
Yes.
And that'll vary by the brand and the manufacturer. There's a Sony camera that was just introduced within the past couple of days.
Uh-huh.
And they have this feature for some of their professional video cameras also, where it's basically always recording. I think it's kind of in a constant loop where it will record images for, I don't remember the exact time, for like 3 seconds before you press the button and like for 2 seconds after you press the button. So I think what it's doing is it's always on. It's always kind of recording and cycling through images so that when you go to press the button, you know, it recorded some images right before you shot and right after you shot.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so I'm not sure exactly then how it, you know, shows you those pictures, or if it, you know, has, you know, like 3 pictures that you can edit and decide to save or not save. But that's a feature I first saw advertised from Sony last year for their professional video cameras, where it said, you know, tired of, you know, waiting for your camera to power up, you know, our, you know, this new camera records, you know, 15 seconds before you shoot.
Oh, yes. So, there are other ways to sometimes miss a good shot.
Right, exactly. And I've had that same experience where, you know, I've just turned the camera on, I'm waiting, or even sometimes when you press the button, It doesn't take the picture just that instant. It takes it just a little bit of time.
I have a second question.
Sure.
I am saving money for a better camera, and I saw an Nikon 8700. I believe, yes, it's the last, and it's 8 megapixels. But a friend of mine, another photographer, he advised me better Nikon D70, what is 6 megapixels. And it's more expensive, so I didn't understand really
right.
why it's more expensive one with less than the other
right.
one.
I can tell you why. The two cameras are different in how they're set up. The Coolpix cameras, and there's a whole gaggle of them. In fact, on the July 2004 Popular Photography magazine, they have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They have 5 of them listed there. With those cameras, in the viewfinder, when you look through the viewfinder, what you're seeing is an image that looks a little bit like it would if you're looking through a video camera.
Mm-hmm.
So the image looks a little bit kind of what I would call chunky or grainy looking. And as you move the camera on, the image kind of jerks as you move it.
Yeah.
When you take the picture, it would take a beautiful picture, but the viewfinder itself is an electronic viewfinder. The other camera, the Nikon...
D70.
Yeah, and then Canon also has a Rebel, digital Rebel.
That is the other one I'm looking for. Canon
right.
Rebel.
Well, with those cameras, it's more of a traditional single-lens reflex camera. It's a traditional SLR camera where when you're looking through the viewfinder, you're actually looking through the lens. It's an optical system where you're looking through the actual lens. And so it's a little bit more expensive to make that system work because... of the optics and the mechanics that you need for it. But I actually recommend people to just do the same thing that your friend recommended to you, that I would rather see, if you're going to spend that much money, I'd rather get the 6-megapixel camera where you're actually looking through the lens rather than using the electronic viewfinder.
Oh, thank you so much.
Sure.
I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for the call. Just to make sure that people – get what you're talking
confusing.
About with the issue of how long it takes to get ready to take a picture. So you're talking about, say, you push a button, you take a picture. Then the question is, how long do I have to wait before I can take my next
right,
picture?
Right, that, or also gosh, look, again, you know, there's little Johnny. Isn't that cute? Where's my camera? There it is. Okay, I'll turn it on. Okay, it's ready.
And by that time, the moment
yeah,
has
the
passed.
Moment's totally gone. Whereas if you had a film camera, you pick it up and click, there it is.
That's it. Okay.
So both of those are, and let's add a third thing there, that when you go to press the shutter button, there's a lag time between when you press the button and when it actually shoots the picture.
Hmm. How long can that be?
Agonizingly long.
You know, like,
long
like
enough to make you angry.
More than a couple seconds?
Well, sometimes it could be if it's trying to do a lot of stuff. If it's trying to figure out the white balance and the focus and the exposure, you know, sometimes it can be. Normally, though, I mean, the specifications normally, I mean, it's clearly less than a second. But in actual practice, sometimes it seems like it's, you know, it's trying to calculate all that stuff and it seems like it can take up to a second.
Well, and because this process is not mechanical, the cameras, do they have different ways of saying to you, I'm taking the picture now?
Yeah, some of them actually have a little digitized shutter sound.
That ka-chunk
sound? Yeah, yeah, they've actually digitized it. And on one of the Canon cameras I had, you could actually choose which shutter sound you wanted.
Oh, you could have it sound like a Nikon or you
yeah,
could say
well,
like
certainly they wouldn't tell you it was a Nikon, but they had different sounds yeah. Oh, you could uh-huh. choose.
Okay. Charleston's the next caller here. Line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. Your mm-hmm. topic is right on. I've been using digital cameras now for the last still 7 or 8 years since they first came out. And the older models, the point-and-shoot type, were fine for taking pictures of things that stand still. But when I started trying to take pictures of my grandson, who's about 3, with a Coolpix, you know, the frustration just really got to me. So
right.
Recently bit the bullet and got the Canon Rebel, which is a great camera. I really enjoy it. It's very much handles very much like my Nikon film camera SLR, which I bought years and years ago.
Right. Uh-huh.
A couple questions. One is what is this business with raw files? Is that anything I should really worry about? I do a little bit of work with Photoshop picture elements or whatever it's called, the least expensive version of that Adobe Photoshop. So I'm used to the digital darkroom, as it were.
Right. You know, raw files are the great mystical abyss in digital photography. If you can spend the time to really mine the data or really get into a raw file, you can do amazing things with your images. What a raw file is, just because I'm sure that lots of people out there have no idea what we're talking about. When the camera shoots a picture, it is doing some calculations and some compressions on that image. It's saying, well, the color balance of the scene is in this narrow range. Even though the camera could record a much wider range of colors, but the camera, to try to make the file sizes smaller, will say, well, I think it's this color balance here, this narrower color balance, and I'm going to compress the image using JPEG compression. So that makes the image smaller. With the raw file, there's actually more detail. There's more color detail. There's also more image detail that's in that. But it's a much larger file. It takes much more computer processing power to really work with that. And up until recently, there weren't really effective software tools to look at that raw file and really work with it very easily. In the newer versions of Photoshop, though, they have a raw file plugin, and usually the manufacturers have their own little raw file software that you can work with. So if you're interested and you have the time to explore that, you can really get amazing detail out of your images by working with that raw file.
Now, you say there is a I've got Photoshop Elements. Is there a plugin that goes with that?
Not with Photoshop Elements, I don't believe. Okay. Usually it's like the full-blown Photoshop.
So I've got to bite the bullet.
Yeah.
The full deal.
Yeah.
I see. One last question. This camera is a real whiz when it comes to taking, you know, rapid-fire pictures in natural light.
Uh-huh.
With a flash, you know, it's another matter because you have to wait for the flash to recharge. Would you care to make a recommendation about an external flash unit, you know, bolt-on type?
Absolutely.
That would have real fast cycle time.
Right. Well, thing number one, what I always recommend to people is that they buy the flash unit that's made by the same manufacturer as our camera.
Right.
So for that camera, the one you'd probably be looking at is the 420EX.
420EX.
Yeah. They also have a 550EX, which is like $300.
Oh, okay.
And the 420 is a little bit more reasonable. But the flash and the camera talk to one another,
mm-hmm.
so you can really optimize the use of the flash and the use of the available light at the scene. Something that I have in all the camera kits that I check out to my students, I have something that's called an off-camera, well, let's just call it an off-camera cord, but Canon calls it an off-camera shoe cord too.
Mm-hmm.
And what it allows you to do is it's a little coily cord that connects your flash to your camera so that you can point that flash anywhere you want to. You can point it in back of you so it bounces off of a wall in back of you. You can point it directly at the person. You can stretch it so it kind of sidelights the subject. It really gives you infinite control of where the flash is pointed.
Mm-hmm.
The cord is maybe like $65, but for the flexibility it gives you in controlling the light is well worth the expense.
So 420EXA plus the cord.
Yeah, I would definitely, that's basically what I would recommend because it gives you just so much flexibility.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. Brian Johnson, our guest. He's professor of journalism in the College of Communications at U of I, teaches photojournalism. He's here. We're talking about cameras and photography. You can give us a call. If you have questions, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. For a lot of people who are getting into digital photography, as we've talked about, one of the basic questions they're maybe going to have to ask is, well, how am I going to print these pictures?
Right.
And now there are some manufacturers that are offering packages that include your camera and something to
sure.
print the picture.
Sure.
And which, on the one hand, you might say, well, that's great. That's all I need. On the other hand, you might say, well, that does... There are some limitations. I assume that means that there's only so much you can do. Your image size is limited. You got to buy your stuff
right.
from them, means they get you on whatever, you know, the paper or whatever it is that's got to go in there. That's the way you're going to get you. So, I mean, how do you think about it, the idea of a package deal, getting everything is real appealing. But, you know, maybe in the long run you might say, well, this just gets kind of the supplies are expensive or – you know, I want to do something with the image that this thing won't let
right.
me do now.
Exactly. And I guess it depends on what kind of deal are you getting. The manufacturers, in essence, are almost giving away the printer, knowing that they're going to make their profit when you buy the inks.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly with the photographs, they just suck so much ink out of those cartridges that they're going to make their money back pretty quickly. One thing that has happened, though, is that a number of the manufacturers have come up with little snapshot size printers so that – because they know that most people really all they want are snapshots. So they have this little printer that will print out snapshot size pictures. You plug in your camera, it prints out the snapshots. Well, that's kind of cool. It's pretty convenient. And if that's what you want to do with it, it might work. But – exactly as you say, be prepared because just because you're doing it yourself doesn't mean it's inexpensive. And I think you really need to look at the cost per photographic image compared to the inconvenience and time of taking it somewhere else and dropping it off. And it might be that it's cheaper to drop it off. And, you know, while you're at the store anyway, they could be, you know, printing your pictures for you. So it's, I think the package deals are fine. But as long as you're just kind of analyzing the whole deal. And if you're getting a great price, you're almost getting the printer for free maybe. Use it till the ink runs dry and then wait till there's another good freebie.
Mm-hmm. So maybe if you already have a computer and you have a printer and it's just a matter of getting the software or maybe you need some kind of, you know, thing to stick in your
right.
computer.
Right. You know, and actually lots of the cameras mm-hmm. come with kind of an intro level, you know, like Photoshop Elements or Photoshop LE or something mm-hmm. like that you can use to work on your images.
Okay. Well, we have a number of callers here. In fact, the lines are full. We'll start in with Champagne, line one.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have an Olympus stylus digital camera that has 2 megapixels.
Uh-huh.
I really like it. I've taken some good pictures with it. It's got a zoom on it, and it works really well. I am, however, wondering if I should increase the megapixels. I've seen one that's a stylus that I like that's 5 megapixels. What would be the advantage?
I think the 2 advantages would be that if you wanted to print out larger size pictures, like if you wanted to print out an 8x10 size picture, or some of the printers will let you print, you know, like an 8.5x22 inch photo. If you wanted to print a much larger size photo than just the snapshot size, then it would make sense. So that would be condition number one. Condition number two would be if you shoot a lot of images and, I don't know, let's say that you love going to dog shows, but you can never get close enough to the dogs and you'd need to crop into the image. That would be another reason why you might want to go to the higher megapixel camera. But if you're mostly just doing snapshot sizes, then it's probably that 2 megapixel, as long as you're kind of filling the viewfinder, filling the frame with your subject matter, then you probably don't need the 5 megapixel.
Okay, good. Thank you.
All right.
Because I've been printing 8x10s, and they've won some prizes at the county fair, so it must be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Thank you much.
All sure. Right.
Bye.
To Charleston, another caller here, line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you can answer this one. I recently inherited some old black and white photographs and want to make copies of them for my kids. And so I gave my husband the task of doing that. He was able to scan them into the computer,
sure,
apparently just fine. But when he came to print them out, he ran into a problem. If he went with just printing it in black, you could see lines,
right,
on the photograph. If he went to printing it with the 4 colors, the pictures had either a pink or a blue cast,
right,
in them, which was undesirable. And so what do we need to do?
Right. Well, when you're just printing with 1 color of ink, those lines are there because for one of 2 possible reasons. One, the printer, you know, maybe just really needs all the other colors to help blend in all of the passes that that the printhead goes through. More likely than that, though, is that most of the printers have a utility where you can go through and realign the printheads. And, you know, if you go to the little software utility that they have for the printer, it will say if you notice gaps between the, you know, or if you notice lines and they're going horizontally, do this. If they're going vertically, you do this. And what it does is it recalibrates the printer so that it doesn't do that.
Okay, so okay. There's something in the program.
Right, in the printer software itself that okay, will let you software. Do that.
Okay.
With when you're using all 4 colors, you'll probably, yes, you will get a color cast. And if you're good and you can kind of outsmart, you know, if it's printing out and it's printing out 2 pink, if you know what you're doing, you can go in and kind of take out that pink. Some printers have a setting where you can do sort of a sepia tone print where it kind of helps neutralize some of that color. But it is very difficult with most of the printers to get a really neutral color balance when you're printing out a black and white image using all the inks. You can do it and the image has, I think, more depth if you're using all the inks, but you just have to experiment a little bit with the different color settings in the printer dialog to help adjust for some of that color cast.
Okay, well, he seems to have adjusted from pink to blue and back.
Yeah, and sometimes sometimes I just tell people choose the color you like and, you know, see if you can do it. Sometimes you can kind of make it a little bit of a sepia tone image, and if you sort of make it a little bit yellow and a little bit red, that sort of gives you sort of a brownish cast and
that's better.
That can help. But as I say, with some software, you there is kind of like a sepia tone setting that you can set that helps to balance that.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks,
sure,
for the call. You know, I just recently was visiting with my mom, and she had a couple old family photos that were really nice. They're black and white photographs, and I wanted to have copies of it. I went down the street to Kinko's.
Yeah.
And I walked in and said, look, can you make copies of this. I decided maybe they'd know best how to use their machines, and I was really impressed.
Yeah.
with using a color copier.
Yeah, exactly.
And how good it looked.
It is amazing, and you still can get some color cast doing it that way. And if their operator knows what they're doing, they can filter out some of that color cast. But yeah, color copies, absolutely fantastic way. Scanning them in and printing them out yourself, that can work really well too. What's nice about scanning them in is then you also have the file. You have the file. So if you want to burn that onto a CD, you can pass it down.
Yeah. Okay. Next up, we have someone in St. Joe, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I'd like to thank the caller previously who talked about the likelihood of software like Photoshop or whatever making people sloppy at the photo making point of making a photo, if for no other reason because these shows tend to be dominated by talk about technology and equipment. But I talked to you about a year ago and told you about how Andreas Fondinger had influenced taught me with his columns and his books, and I'd like you to recommend some books that convey to folks. Not just talk about technical stuff, but talk about the elements that comprise a good photograph, such as composition, lighting, timing, juxtaposition, and patterns, and whatever else you want to throw in the mix. But
sure.
I can recommend a couple of books.
Well, do you have some favorites? Why don't you recommend?
Well, as I say, Andreas Fondinger, I think is I don't know if his books are still in print, but his books are excellent. Right off the top of my head, I can't think of any others. I'm wondering if you have some you can recommend.
You know, there are some books that talk about how to get a good photograph. And actually, for me, the way that I teach photography is we'll talk about the technical stuff, but then the students have to go out and do the photographs themselves. So I go at it from this approach where I want people to look at photographic books. Mm-hmm. I want them to notice photographs in magazines and newspapers and in the popular media. I want them to know how to handle their camera so that the image they have in their mind, they know how to transpose into the photographic medium. And there's almost no substitute for shooting a lot of pictures and then analyzing them. So I don't have a lot of books right off the top of my head either that really talk about, you know, that, you know, a person that critiques photography, Susan Sontag. She has many books out there. There's a book by Howard Chapnick that's called Truth Needs No Ally. That's a wonderful book that's geared a little bit towards photojournalism, but it's really about, again, the strength of your work and what does your work say. So,
mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying, but I understand about how to use the equipment, but you need to know what you're using it for. And I think, although first-hand experience is the best teacher, also, I think one of the things that Fondinger put in my head that's still there is the idea of, and it's a phrase you use frequently, is seeing in terms of photography, which is a way of seeing all these elements in your everyday life, which I think is fundamental to really being a good photographer.
Absolutely. And I'm not suggesting by any means that I only approach things from a technical standpoint, because that, at least the way I'm teaching photography, that's not the point at all. I'd really take the approach that it's the content that matters, and you have to be able to identify what is the story in this situation. What am I trying to photograph and why? And then what is the best way to do that? And I think you're right that reading about just the technical side isn't enough. But reading isn't just enough. At some point, you really have to...
No. I wouldn't... No, that's not what I'm saying.
Right. Good. Yeah.
I think it's good to...
I think we're in agreement then.
I think so. Well, I'd recommend anything. If people still can find books by Fondinger in print, he's
great.
Very, very, very good to read.
Good.
Okay. Well,
yeah,
thanks
absolutely.
For coming. Very good.
Thanks.
Well, let's
Thank
go
you.
On here. We had about 5 or 6 minutes left, and we have two callers. So next is Tuscola, line 3. Hello.
Yes,
yeah.
I have a question about old pictures also.
Sure.
I have a huge collection of slides, and I'm hoping there is some device on the market that that would enable me to plug into my VCR or my computer and look at the slides.
Sure.
I realize you can scan and so forth. I just want to. I've got hundreds of boxes.
Right.
Is there anything on the market other than buying a slide projector?
Well, here's an interesting tip for you. And this is maybe sound kind of funny, but many of the local movie theaters used to show slides before the movies.
Uh-huh.
They've recently changed over to using a digital projector and a computer file.
Uh-huh.
So they were selling slide projectors for like $25.
Oh, no.
Which was an amazing, amazing deal. Now, this was at the Savoy 16 here in Champaign.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if they still have any, but you could call them and see. They actually started out at $50. I think the last I saw at $25, but they were really solid, good projectors. So that would be a great approach. I don't know of any easy way to get them on to a VCR necessarily, but I do know that there are some scanners you can get where they have a batch processing mode where you can put in a stack of slides and it'll scan one, spit it out, then scan the next one, spit it out. I know that. Okay. Couple of the Nikon film scanners had that as an option.
Okay. Thank you. That's some good advice.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for the call. And back here to Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I just thought I'd mention something. I found another use for the digital camera recently.
Uh-huh.
If you have OmniPage on your computer with your scanner, you can scan a book page and read it in as text.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's kind of handy if you're in the rare book room or something of this sort, and you can't carry your flatbed with
right,
you.
Right, right. And actually, a friend of mine who works at the News Gazette, Robert K.O. Daniel, had done some experiments where he photographed a piece of paper that, I don't know if it's an illustration or, I think it was a poster or something. So he photographed it with his digital camera, and then he also scanned it on the flatbed. And the digital camera was actually a much sharper image. So so things like, getting copy shots of rare documents, it's actually better if you have a decent digital camera to actually go and photograph it anyway.
I have one that I wanted small rather than anything else. I use it for taking pictures of plants at plant shows. And then if I really want something, I get the Minolta out and take a good picture.
Right, uh-huh.
But it's about 3 megapixels. I think you really want at least 5 or 6 megapixels if you're going to scan a, 9 by 12 inch
absolutely
page.
Yes. I think that's right.
I had to do it in half pages.
I would totally agree. Uh-huh.
I just thought I'd pass it along.
Yeah, good.
All right.
Thanks.
Well, thank you. I occasionally hang out with some of my friends and colleagues downstairs here in the building who work in television, and I have watched how carefully they think about lighting.
Absolutely.
And, one of the things about television is it really tends to flatten stuff out. Mm-hmm. So the way that you try to deal with that is with light. That can take, lots of time and thought and experience. But I guess, one thing that I have learned is that they're thinking about light, at the very least, they're thinking about light coming from three different directions.
Uh-huh.
A very strong main source of light that tends to be kind of on one side of a person.
Right.
Another secondary source that's on their other side.
Right.
And then
the fill light.
Fill light, yeah. And then a backlight.
Right.
Which essentially
or a hair light.
Shines down on the back of the person's
right.
head, which gives their hair a little highlight
exactly.
and makes it look really
uh-huh.
makes it look really nice.
And then sometimes they're going to add a fourth light, which would be lighting the background.
Yeah. And then, definitely the background. They pay lots of attention to the background and the background light. And when you see the finished product, you say, wow, that looks really
right.
great. And that's why, because they've taken all that time
absolutely.
To do that.
And one of the first assignments I have my students do is they have to illustrate the concept of color. And they have to illustrate the concept of light. And it's exactly to get people thinking about, well, how is the light falling on this subject? How could I illustrate the concept of light? Too often people are only thinking about the quantity of light. Can I make a picture? Is there enough light? And they don't spend enough time usually thinking about the quality of the light. How does it look? If I move my own position, how will that affect the look of this image I'm about to shoot because it changes the angle that the light strike in the subject.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking in terms of taking a photograph, you can't really, you're not going to be able to do all that kind of stuff. But can you sort of think about that?
Absolutely. You know, and if you're doing a portrait of someone, you can have them turn, you know, you could have them turn in 360 and you watch how the light strikes them and you turn around with them, right? And the light will change each of those times. If it's something that you can't move, you can walk around it yourself and see how that affects the light. And then the other option is that you can come back at different times of day. And it's incredible how much that can have an effect. So either walking around the object to see how the light is at that one time or then possibly coming back at different times of day. But that is one really quick way to produce some amazing images of seemingly mundane objects.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll leave it there. Thanks
great.
Very much.
Oh, yeah, it's great to be here.